Welcome back to the Jordan Syatt mini podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I have a great episode for you today with Inner Circle member Laura, and we discuss a lot, but one of the most important topics we discuss is how to maintain your weight loss, because many people are very good at losing weight, but they struggle with maintaining it. And Laura has struggled with this in the past, and this time she's been so successful with her weight loss that she wants to make sure she can maintain it after she's lost all of it. So we discussed that. I think it's a really good conversation. I think you're gonna like it a lot. If you do, please leave a 5-star review on iTunes. And if you want to join the Inner Circle, you can do that at the link in the show notes. With that said, let's get into the episode. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Amazing. All right. We are recording, Laura. We are live. I'm very excited to chat with you. I know that you said you were nervous about it, and I appreciate you sending the email so we can get on and talk. I think this is going to be wonderful.
I hope so. Yeah.
So do me a favor. Just tell me a little bit about yourself, and then from there we'll dive right in and see how I might be able to help.
Sure. So I am Laura. I'm 49 years old. I live in Western Pennsylvania. I've lived in parts of Western PA my whole life, but I'm outside Pittsburgh now. And I went to college. I wasn't athletic in high school and college, but I was very involved in marching band. So you'll probably, a lot of people don't think that's super athletic, but it's a lot of walking, a lot of marching. Difficult. I carried a heavy instrument my last year doing it. So in that sense, I was active, very active. After college, got a desk job, got married, had two kids, and, you know, as it happens, weight started piling on, that kind of thing. I've been working. I work in the telecommunications or teleconferencing industry, actually, doing audio conferencing. And, you know, I'm surrounded by musicians. My husband is a music teacher. My dad was a music teacher. And so a lot of music in our house and in our lives and that kind of thing. And so, you know, I got into fitness after my kids were in school, and actually it was just 10 years ago, I started to decide I wanted to lose weight. I was on cholesterol medication and didn't want that to continue. So I started getting involved. I decided to start running at that point, and, you know, lost weight by counting calories, but I was doing all cardio and running. I ran 5Ks and 10Ks and half marathons, and eventually did a marathon. And after that point, my body was just kind of wrecked. And that was in 2017. I stopped running, and took me a few years after that to figure out what I wanted to do. I played around with beach body workouts and things like that. I kept active, but I did start putting a little weight back on. I had lost 40 pounds. And up till when I joined the Inner Circle in February, I had put about 20 of that back on. And, you know, I joined the Inner Circle when I found you and found Susan and read her book, and it really spoke to me, being that I'm getting older, and similar story with the running and even the musical background and everything. It really spoke to me, and I decided to join the Inner Circle, and that's where I am now.
I love it. That's amazing. So talk to me. What are you going through right now, and is there anything that I might be able to help with?
Sure. Well, a few things. One, I have a lot of anxiety, which has always affected me. I could go back to, you know, thinking about it, I go back all the way to like high school. A lot of social anxiety. And the way I always dealt with that, I realized the other day, I was just thinking about this, that even back then, I would come home from school and really, you know, anxious about socializing things, and I would eat. I just loved, you know, it just comforted me. And I've kind of kept that. I've never been terribly, you know, it's never had a huge weight issue. I did, you know, need to lose about 50 pounds, but it was enough to scare me when, you know, the cholesterol issue became an issue, and just the weight. But I go back and I realize that I still have those tendencies. When my anxiety gets bad, it's something I turn to, is especially sweets. And I've always done that, even though I logically know everything of how to deal with it, or, you know, that I shouldn't be doing that. And, you know, I can try to make the choices, but sometimes I turn to that still. You know, so there's that factor and just how to deal with anxiety and the emotional eating factor. And I wasn't sure if, you know, you had really, if listened to your podcasts and things, if you'd really had anyone who had talked a whole lot about anxiety and generalized anxiety disorder and how it affects every part of your life. You know, it, you can see it affects me being a little nervous talking to you right now. But, you know, I'm always trying to get myself willing to do new things and get over these fears. But, you know, it still comes back with the eating. And I think with COVID the last couple of years and all of that, and I know everybody was affected by that, I've gone back to some of those emotional eating ways. So, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about that and also talk a little bit about, you know, my 50th, on a more positive note, my 50th birthday is next year, and I want to have some exciting strength goals. Maybe you can help me talk about where I am now and what would be realistic goals, that kind of thing.
I love that. I love all of that. And just a lot I want to say, thank you for being willing to do this talk, even if it makes you anxious, and especially if it makes you anxious. It's funny, every time before I do a podcast with someone, they're always writing in the Skype chat, just being like, I'm so nervous. It's like, it's always nerve wracking. And for me, it's funny just because it's like, I'm just a short, bald, nerdy dude. And like, you know, I've always been like the weird, goofy kid. And like, it's funny that people would be nervous. I understand it because I don't know if you've heard this. I've told the inner circle this over the years, but it still blows my mind how incredible the community is and how people trust me, because I think people might look at me or whether it's on video or look at the follower count, whatever it is, and they just assume like I've got it all together and I'm just super confident. But that I'm a human, right? And I have insecurities just like everybody else. And it still blows my mind that I have this inner circle with the most supportive and amazing community, to the point where every month when Susan and I publish the new edition, every single month, I am petrified that everyone's going to figure out like, oh, he's a fraud, right? It's sort of that imposter. Like every time when I hit publish, I am petrified. And I'm not kidding. I say a prayer before every month. And I'm always like, thank you for everything that I have. Thank you for everything that you've given me. Thank you for this community, like all of it. And I'm like, just after I hit publish, I'm just waiting for everything to crumble, right? Just because everyone must have figured out that like, I don't know what I'm talking about, right? So I tell you that story because it's not the same as generalized anxiety disorder. I've had my own issues with anxiety. I don't think I was ever diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder, but it is sometimes helpful to know that we all struggle with anxiety on some level. And it's important to know that you're not alone. And I love that you're here and talking about it, because as you were saying it, I don't recall anybody ever. I've had people say they've struggled with anxiety, but I don't think we've had a discussion built around that and how that might affect food and your relationship with food. So I'm very excited for this, but I'm also very appreciative, and I understand that it could be very difficult for you to do that. And so I wanted to acknowledge and say thank you for being willing to push through that discomfort. It means a lot, and it says a lot about you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's something I'm working on. I'm trying to put myself out there and do more things that make me uncomfortable. And a lot of that strength, actually, I've heard you say that several times over the last several months about doing things you're not comfortable with. And it really did speak to me. And, you know, the inner circle is just amazing. Everyone in there is wonderful and so much support. And I don't think I wouldn't have done this several months ago, but after 10 months now, I guess, in the inner circle, it's given me new confidence, and it's just a wonderful community.
That makes me so happy. It is true. It's one of those things that I think my mom instilled it within me, is the doing the things that make you uncomfortable. I'll never forget this. We grew up outside of Boston, and have you ever heard of the furniture company called Jordan's Furniture?
No.
So in the Northeast, it's a really big furniture company. It's these two guys, I believe their last name is Jordan. But either way, they have these huge furniture stores in the Northeast. And some of them are like it's basically like a carnival inside. They've got trapeze and they've got like all these they've got carousels and they've got the big, I'm forgetting the name right now. What's the thing? You have a big circular thing that people go on and they sit in the seats, and in the movies it's where always they have their first kiss. What's the name of that thing?
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about? It's the carnival ride that's like it goes very slowly. It's just a big
circle. Oh, like the Ferris tunnel wheel. Of Ferris. Love kind of thing. Oh, Ferris wheel.
Ferris
okay.
Wheel, yeah. They have a Ferris wheel inside, and they have restaurants. It's crazy. It's a crazy, crazy, crazy furniture store. And I remember my mom took us in there once, and it was my brother and I, and they literally had a trapeze lessons, like these trapeze where people are flying on trapeze like 100 feet in the air. And my brother and I don't know, we couldn't have been more than 10, 11 years old. And I remember my brother, he was like, oh my God, that's crazy. And as soon as he said that, my mom was like, all right, you're doing it. And
we were
like, what? And she was like, it's important to do things like that. And she literally forced us to do these trapeze lessons because we thought it was crazy. And she was like, you have to do it now because like, you have to do things that make you uncomfortable. And so I've consistently noticed that doing the things that scare the hell out of you, and that like obviously within reason, not, you know, but like doing the things that really scare you and doing the things that make you really nervous, no one ever regrets doing it. Like when we get off this, who knows, maybe you'll regret doing this. Maybe like, wow, he's a real asshole, right? But like no one ever regret. They're always like, you know what? I'm very proud of myself that I did that. And it allows you to continue to make those choices that are very difficult, but sometimes they need to be made. So having said all that and all my incessant rambling, talk to me a little bit about your anxiety. Talk to me a little about like when you started noticing your anxiety and the behaviors that it's affected.
Sure. I think I remember it as far back as being in school, like I was saying earlier about eating after school and things. And I was always just really worried about what everyone thought of me. And public speaking was absolutely impossible. If I would have to give a speech in school, I would be shaking like a leaf. I'd be holding my paper and everybody could see me shaking, you know? But I've always been comfortable with my friends and I like having, I'm introverted, but I like to socialize, you know, but when it was people I wasn't certain of, I was just very nervous. And it's gotten better and better over the years, but throughout my entire life, you know, I still worry constantly about what everyone thinks about me or what, you know, what's this person thinking? Am I doing everything perfectly at work and in parenting and everything? And I'm just like a constant, my mind is constantly going and it affects things. For example, I was going to talk to you about sleep. You know, I know how important sleep is, but the last few years I sleep 7 hours is a good night for me. It's like 5 to 7 hours. I wake up at 3 a.m. sometimes and I'm just up for the day because my mind is just churning. So it affects me that way. And I tend to really just overanalyze everything. I had someone call me a catastrophic thinker once. So that's exactly what I am. It's so perfect. But, you know, like, and even with, you know, nutrition and everything, when I joined the inner circle, I did everything exactly as you said, all the start here. And I followed the directions exactly in the emails and did everything. And I just took it all in. But then I had like analysis paralysis, you know, the unicorn challenge, I did that exactly as written. But then after that, do I do a straight deficit? Do I do calorie cycling? And I just go around and around in my mind to the point where I don't do anything because I'm just like, so, you know, basically my anxiety is just that my mind never stops working and worrying about things.
That makes total sense. That makes a lot of sense. And have you noticed that even at today, like more currently, that your anxiety leads to unhealthy eating behaviors? Is that something that you're struggling with?
Strangely, it's gotten better the last 3 months. When we had to reschedule this a couple of times, because I had to reschedule once and then your honeymoon got rescheduled, which congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Exciting. So I totally understand. We each rescheduled once, but when I first contacted you, I was really struggling with it. And then at the end of August, I kind of said to myself, I took my son back to college and I said to him, I'm going to lose X amount of pounds by the time you come home, which I know now was a ridiculous thing to give a number to it like that. But it was enough to spur me on somehow. And then I started doing a consistency post in the inner circle. Every day I start a thread, and other people seem to appreciate it. I figured I'll do it. And if it annoys everyone, no one will comment. But I decided it, and I've been doing it ever since. And I don't know if it's that or what. Something just kind of clicked. And so I've done a lot better, and I've lost about 10 pounds now since the end of August.
Shut up. Are you kidding me?
Yep.
Let me get this straight. You've lost weight and improved your relationship with food in the same 3 months.
I think so. Yeah. Now there are times like the last 2 weeks, I can be perfectly honest. I'm giving myself my red X's on my consistency calendar just for hitting my calories. My protein has been horrible because it's been holidays and baking, but I'm counting for all of that, but I'm definitely not hitting the protein. But I've kind of decided to give myself a little slack and just try to hit the calories at least until the new year. But even with that, I'm not, like it used to be, if I ate one cookie, I'd eat 10, or I would be stressed in the evening and I would just go crazy and start eating everything in sight. And that just hasn't happened really.
That's incredible. And just so you know, for being a self-proclaimed catastrophic thinker, for you to say, you know what, it's the holidays, a consistent day will just be my calories, even if I'm nowhere near my protein, that's a pretty damn impressive change for you to make on your own. That is like, that is the opposite of catastrophic thinking. That is just clear, logical. Hey, it's the holiday time. I'm not going to freak out over my protein intake. I'll do my best to keep my calories in check, and I'm still going to be consistent. Like, hell yeah, Laura, you're incredible. You're crushing it. This is amazing.
Thanks. And I think a lot of that is because I have literally listened to every one of your podcasts and every one of Susan's podcasts, and I've read everything in the inner circle, and I just have really taken it to heart. So I really have to thank you guys for putting that knowledge in my head that it's okay to do that and not be upset with myself. It used to be an all or nothing kind of thing. You know, if I wasn't going to do one part, then I'm not going to do any of it. You know,
can I ask you a question? Mm-hmm. So you said something that I find very intriguing. And you actually just sort of mentioned it again, you used to be the all or nothing person. You mentioned that, you know, if you used to have one cookie, then it would be 10, right? And I've had this conversation with to say literally over 1,000 people would not be an exaggeration, where people, they'll tell me, no, like I can't just have one slice of pizza. It's either no pizza or the whole pizza. Right. And I'm very interested to hear from your point of view, what, if anything specific, has helped you go from all or nothing to being able to enjoy a cookie without needing 10 of them?
To be perfectly honest, I don't know.
Fair. That's a fair answer.
This is what happened the first time I lost weight too. When I hit that point back in 2012, actually it took me until about 2014 to really start getting serious about it, but it was like one day I just decided I could do it, and I stuck to my calories and I lost, you know, 40 pounds, and it took a couple years, but I did it, and I was maintaining and doing really well. And then I went back to my old ways in the last few years, and then I don't know what happened at the end of August, but something has made me just, it's not even hard right now, which sounds strange, but I'm just waiting for it to come back, that urge to go crazy. But like lately, even if I have a couple cookies, it's like my priorities now have just finally clicked that I don't want to, because I'm seeing progress and I want to continue.
So I love that. Yeah. I love that. You know, and what this makes me think about is, you know, in life, a very common cliche idiom is the effect of life is like the seasons, right? We have different seasons of life. It sounds like the season you're in right now is really prioritizing this specific goal, right? What I've found to be very helpful is because you're right. You said like you're waiting for it to come back, right? For the urge to just like to almost be all or nothing for it to come back. What I've found oftentimes is that it's great while it is your priority, but eventually it won't be your priority anymore. And it's important to come up with another goal that could be your priority when this one begins to fade. And it could be a goal that has literally nothing to do with weight loss. It could be a goal that generally has something to do with your performance, your strength, right, something else that will, it's equally important for you to still stay consistent, not perfect, but consistent with your nutrition for achieving that other goal. And this is what has allowed me over the years to, I call it goal stacking, where, you know, for 1 year, you'll focus on this one goal. And then once that is no longer a priority or something you care about very much, or you've achieved everything you want to with that goal, then you can go to a different goal. Maybe you do that for 6 months. And then after 6 months, you switch to another goal for 10 months. And you have these long periods of time where at any one point in time, you don't feel like you've accomplished very much. But if you look back after 5 or 10 years, you've just stacked 5 to 10 huge goals on top of each other, and you've accomplished a tremendous amount. So I think if you're sort of like gripping the seat, waiting for that desire to come back, I think this would be a really good time to think, okay, what might you want to achieve as well, so that when the time comes when weight loss is no longer a priority for you, what else can you focus on? Does that make sense?
That absolutely does. And in fact, I kind of think that might be what happened to me now that you put it that way, because when I lost weight the first time, once I got to where I wanted to maintain, I was super focused on races, doing half marathons, and then decided to run. I ran the Chicago Marathon, and that was my focus. That was my passion, and I was so into that. And I'm sure that running all those miles probably did allow me to eat a little more, but I also know that I couldn't have gone crazy. I would have started gaining. But I was able to keep things in check. And it was after I ran that marathon and had some injuries and stopped running and was kind of lost from beginning of 2018, really, until beginning of this year. I didn't have that goal. You know, I was exercising, I was doing these workouts, but I didn't have that passion anymore that I used to get from running races. And I kept trying to convince myself that I needed to go back to that, but it just wasn't even exciting for me anymore. It always made me hurt. So that's going to not be a motivator. But, you know, so I needed to find something new. And I found that now. But even after finding lifting, it's taken me a few months to get back on track. And I joined in February, and I was really good the first couple of months, and then I kind of slipped, but I feel like everything's kind of coming together now, and I'm starting to think more of the goals for this next year and even beyond that, as far as, you know, strength goals and lifting and what challenges I want to have.
I love that. And I think you're 100% right. And that's, you might even now see why we have so many different potential options in the inner circle, because, for example, the beginning of my career was powerlifting. I was a competitive elite professional powerlifter. That's what I did. That's all I thought about. And at that point in my life, I thought, this is all I'm going to do. This is all I want to do. And like everything, after a certain point, your passion for it will go away. I mean, there are very few people who remain unrelentingly passionate about one thing forever. Mm-hmm. Very few people. And it's normal to have changes in passions and what you enjoy and what you want to spend your time doing and your priorities. And so that's why, so for example, we have powerlifting programs, but we also have a chin-up programs or deadlift programs or squat programs or just the regular monthly programs with specific emphases. It's because it is completely and utterly unrealistic to expect anybody to have one single passion for their whole life. And that's why it's like, I love when people like, it's why I do jujitsu, right? Like, I got tired of powerlifting. I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. So I'm going to find something else that's another form of exercise that I absolutely love. And so now that I think you're getting really into strength training and you're enjoying it, it's probably going to be easier for you to say, you know what, I would love to accomplish this within the next 2 years, or I'd love to accomplish this within the next year or 10, whatever it is. But having a really concrete goal of something that really inspires you and excites you and maybe even scares you at the thought of, is this even possible? I think could be a really great way to keep everything consistent without really falling off track. Does that make sense?
It does. It definitely does. And that's why, you know, like every one of those specialization programs you mentioned, I know at some point I want to do, because each of them excites me. But I know I have years to do them. There's no rush. Do it in a logical manner. I went to my first, I didn't compete. I was a spectator at a powerlifting meet last weekend. Yeah, it was last weekend.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, my gym hosts a charity meet every Christmas time. Originally, I thought maybe I would enter it because they said, oh, amateurs are welcome, any level, you know, but I chickened out, I guess. I just didn't feel ready, but I decided I'm going to go watch because I didn't even know what it would be like. And, you know, that's something maybe I could do next year. But, you know, I knew that I originally thought, oh, I want to do this because it was going to fill that void of, you know, I felt like I missed racing, you know, and being at the races and things. I don't feel so much that I need that anymore. Like I can just do this for myself, even if I never enter a meet, but it was fun to do. And it was exciting. And that's another possibility. I feel like there are a lot of options.
I couldn't possibly love that anymore. If you decide to do, I mean, meet or no meet, I support you 100%. But if you decide to do a meet, I like am so overly excited about it. It's hard for me to articulate it. I've always said it, once someone tries a meet, they're going to do another. It's addicting so quickly. The community, as I'm sure you saw, was very supportive and encouraging of everybody. I think I spoke about this in the Inner Circle Live yesterday, where I think I'm not sure if it was you, someone asked, do I need to be at a certain strength level before I do a powerlifting competition? And I always laugh at that question because no one ever asks that, like if they're going to run a 5K, just like no one is ever like, do I have to get a certain time to be good at this 5K? It's like, no, it doesn't. No one cares what your 5K time is. Just go run it for you. But for powerlifting, people are like, no, like I'm going to be the weakest one. No one, when they do a 5K, is like, oh, I'm going to be the slowest one. It's like, no, it's like you do a 5K for you to try and improve your 5K time. Same thing with powerlifting. You go in there. It's you versus you. It's you today versus who you were yesterday or the last time you competed. And it's a really incredible feeling. I think it's a feeling that, quite frankly, as adults, we really don't get very much. Where, you know, when you're a kid, sometimes whether it's in school or in sports, there's competition all the time, whether it's with your grades, whether it's with other students in the class, whether it's you're on the athletic field or whatever it is. But as an adult, this competition is lost in many of our lives. And I think it's important to create that, because I think that even if you don't consider yourself a competitive individual versus others, creating competition within yourself and between yourself, I think is one of the greatest things you can do for self-improvement. And it's so exciting. So if you decide to do that, I will help you find a meet that is local to you. I will help out whatever you need. I'll help with it. But I couldn't possibly love that more.
Great. Thanks. Yeah, I know my gym does this one every year at Christmas time. And whether I wait a year to do it, at least I know this one's there. And they have other meets that are more for their powerlifting team that are actually competitive. But yeah, I might do it. And in a way, after you said that, I'm thinking, oh, I should have just done it this year. But but I'm glad I got to see it first and see what it was all about. I would have been a little intimidated because it's, you know, all these people just sitting there staring at one person at a time going, which, you know, because of the earlier discussion we had, you know, that would have given me a little anxiety.
Oh, yeah. I remember, I mean, it's funny, the powerlifting meet, because, you know, you have three squats, three bench, three deadlift. The nerves before that first squat are unbelievable. Like it's actually bewildering to me. I remember vividly all the competitions I did. The nerves before that first squat, when you have all those eyes on you and you're about to go up there, it is petrifying, which is why my approach to all of the lifts, but especially the squat, is like people ask, how do you know which numbers to open with? Like what should your opening weight be? And I always say, you should be able to squat that opening weight at 2 a.m. If you woke up, if someone randomly woke you up 2 a.m, shook you up, said, get up and squat this weight, which would be pretty scary if someone randomly did that. But like if they had set up an entire squat rack in your room and like set that weight on the bar, you should be able to hit that weight at 2 a.m. You're that confident that you can hit it because that's the nerves get in people's way so much. And the reason people will bomb out of a meet or that they will bomb out of a meet basically means that they don't legally get any of their lifts. They didn't go deep enough. They didn't actually complete the lift, whatever it is because they get too nervous and oftentimes mess up and they picked a weight that was too high to begin with. So with all of that said, I'm sorry for rambling. With all of that said, do you have an idea, and it doesn't have to be powerlifting, by the way. Do you have an idea of maybe what goal you would like to start maybe chasing now that would also be a good transition goal once you decide, you know what, I'm good with weight loss, like I don't need to do it anymore. And like what performance-based goal, strength-based goal, lifestyle-based goal, what goal would you like to strive for over the next, we'll call it 6 to 12 months, that you'd love to achieve?
I have a couple of areas and I don't know which one to choose first. I just did deadlift domination and love deadlifting. It was so much fun. I got a 200-pound deadlift.
Let's go. Wow.
My current weight is about 146. So, you know, it would be nice to get to, you know, 1.5. I mean, I'm close to getting 1.5.
Yeah, you're very close. That's amazing.
I don't know how realistic, in what time frame, 2 times would be nice to do someday. But I also... my major weakness, I think I gravitate towards the deadlift because it's my strongest area. And yeah, something I don't work on are my weaknesses. And my upper body is so much weaker. I mean, obviously it's going to be weaker, but I mean, comparatively, even taking that into account, you know, I can't do a single chin up. I would love to do that. And even just improve, this is more general, but improve my upper body lifts, because I'm seeing so much improvement over the last 10 months, my deadlift went crazy. I had never deadlifted before. So with a barbell, I had done, you know, dumbbell deadlifting. But so I saw a huge gain in that, but I'm not seeing the change in the upper body. You know, mm-hmm. And so I don't know if I should choose something that's a little, that I need more over something that's as much fun for me. Or maybe,
that,
you know.
That's a great question. That's a great question. I'll give you some personal experience and I'll let you, and we can discuss it more. Deadlifting is my favorite lift as well. It's, in my opinion, the best lift. And I guarantee I say that largely because it's also my best lift. I've never been the biggest fan of bench press, and that's also because I have never been that great at bench pressing, right? Like, as a powerlifter, I was known for my deadlift. I wasn't known for my bench press. With that being said, you know, the words you used were very deliberate and very interesting to note. You're like, well, what should I focus on? The one that's exciting or one that I need? And what I realized when I was powerlifting was, I was like, I'm never going to be like, I'm 5'4". Short, bald Jewish guy, I'm never going to be an NBA basketball player ever, right? I'm never going to get in the NBA. That is just without question. It's not going to happen. Good luck. No matter how much basketball I play, never going to happen. I realized I was never going to be a world-class bench presser. And I knew I didn't need to specialize my bench press because like I was never going to be world class, and I didn't really care about being world class in that. I wanted to really focus on the thing that I enjoyed the most and the one that I was best at, which was deadlifting. So for me, that made the most sense because I just didn't really care that much about bench press. Now, I'm not saying that's the right move for you at all. I'm just saying it's important to make the distinction between, all right, I want to do this because it's the one I have the most fun with. It's the one that really brings me the most joy, the one that you're the best at, versus, okay, I want to focus on this one because I suck at it, because I know I can be better and I want to put more effort into it. Both answers are valid. You just have to figure out which one motivates and excites you more.
Right. And I think now that I've focused on the deadlift for a little while, even though I know I want to get back to that, I'm a little excited about doing something different. And I know I phrased it as what excites me versus what I feel like I should do. But what I really meant, I guess, is should I focus on something new that is going to be harder for me? Like sometimes I think I shy away from those things because they're harder, but I'm going to feel so tough and so badass if I do those things, you know, if I
love
chin up, like, oh my gosh, I can't even imagine because I'm so far from it right now. And I wonder, sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm never even going to be able to do that. So why even try?
Well, in that case, I think we know the answer is to do those things, like without question. I promise you, Laura, and I don't say this lightly, I won't promise something unless I actually believe it to be true. I guarantee you, you can do a chin up. I promise you, without a shadow of a doubt, if you decide, you know what, within 2 years, I want to be able to do chin-ups, I guarantee it, we can get you to do chin-ups. Like, not a question.
Great.
do you believe me or no?
No, I do believe it because I am seeing some improvement, although slow. And I mean, I believe you because I've seen you do it with other people. I've seen so many people in the inner circle say, oh my gosh, I finally got my first chin up. So I do believe it. It just feels more insurmountable right now, but I want to do it. So
now the other really cool thing about this, specifically the goal of, you know what, I want to focus on my upper body, whether it's bench press or chin ups or both, is they're inherently less taxing on your nervous system than say a deadlift, because you're limited by how much weight you can lift. With a deadlift, you can lift 200 pounds, which, Laura, that's unbelievable. That's incredible. But lifting 200 pounds is obviously more stressful, not just on your tendons and ligaments and joints and bones and muscular system and in your central nervous system, but the chin-ups and bench press, they're so much less stressful because you're lifting so much less weight and you're also using so much, you're using fewer muscle groups also, like the smaller muscle groups. So the cool thing is you can still improve your deadlifts while you're chasing a bench press and chin up goal, because there's no reason why you can't do both at the same time. Whereas if the goal is deadlift specificity, like you just did with deadlift domination, you can still improve the others, but it's much harder because the total stress on your body and nervous system is way higher with that type of a goal. Whereas with the bench press or chin-up goals, this total stress on your body is relatively low, which leaves so much room for improvement elsewhere.
And that's great because I like doing it all, you know, and I'm excited being back to the monthly editions because it's just so well-rounded. And I feel like I'm going to improve on everything. But at the same time, that's where I was going to ask you, you know, how do you do that while also having a goal to get better in one specific area? And I didn't know if it was better to do the monthly editions and then do the grease the groove that kind of thing with the chin-ups, or should I do master the chin-up eventually? I think I heard you on a recent podcast saying to allow a few months between the specialization programs, so don't go right into one after you did another.
So I'm glad you said that. So the specialization programs for the deadlift and the squat, I do not want you doing back to back for literally the exact same reason that I just said, in terms of they're very stressful on your central nervous system, because those programs and those specific exercises, you can handle way more weight. But if you wanted to go, for example, from, say, deadlift domination straight to the chin-up mastery program, you can absolutely do that, because the chin-up program is not nearly as stressful as the deadlift or the squat program. So I wouldn't go back and forth between deadlift and squat. You would definitely want to take a few months off in between. But if you wanted to, say, do deadlift domination and then chin-up specialization and then go back to some of the monthly workouts, that would be totally fine.
Okay.
You'll notice there's a pretty significant difference in programming between deadlift domination and chin-up specialization. The programming is very different from how we specialize those two things, whereas deadlift domination and squat supremacy, those are actually very similar in how we program, because the requirements and demands on the body and the central nervous system are very similar, whereas the chin-up, it's very different for many, many reasons. So you can actually do the deadlift domination followed by chin-up specialization, no problem.
Okay.
Now, do you know which one you'd prefer, if you'd prefer to focus on bench press or chin-ups as a specialized, which goal you might want to do first?
I don't know if it matters which I do first. I want to improve on both. You know, the chin-up, of course, sounds super exciting, but I've also realized I'm also enjoying bench pressing more too now, though. So if you have a recommendation of which to do first, if one sort of supports the other in any way.
What I would say is this: if you love doing both right now, then I would do the regular monthly programs.
Okay.
And add in some of the grease the groove as well.
Okay.
If you have a chin-up bar or around the house or something, just I would say maybe make it a total of 5 times that day you'll do some type of a chin-up, and then just do a little bit of grease the groove in addition to it. But the chin-up specialization program is obviously, I think, the best program I've ever written for chin-up goals, but it's not a bench press specific goal, because like it's still upper body, even though they're opposing movements, opposing muscle groups, it would be a little bit taxing, which is why like I made it a chin-up specific program. Whereas the monthly editions, they're more all encompassing. You'll get the best of both worlds of the chin-up as well as the bench press. So I would say the monthly editions are going to be your best bet to get the best of both worlds, so that you can do both. And then if you decide, you know, a couple months in, you're like, you know what, I want to go all chin-up specialization for a little while, then do that. And then you can go back to the monthly editions. I am going to write a bench press specialization workout this year. That is definitely something I'm going to do. It's long overdue. But for right now, I'd say if you want to focus on both, just do the monthly editions.
Okay. That's what I'm already a couple of weeks into December and enjoying that. So, the December edition, I should say. Good. So I'll keep going with that. Do you have any, I know you don't like to put end dates on things, but, you know, I kind of wanted something special for that. I'm turning 50 next year kind of thing. Any guesses to, you know, something I could go for that would kind of be like a big celebratory, or do you not recommend doing anything like that?
You mean like a certain like, strength?
Yeah, a strength goal, whether it be a certain deadlift or I'm able to do chin-ups or.
When is your birthday?
Or maybe the powerlifting meet would be the big thing, because it's literally my birthday weekend is when that happened this year. So.
Oh, did it really? What weekend is your birthday? What's your birthday?
It was the 9th. So it was a couple days after it was December on the 11th.
9th? Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, let me see. You know, I don't think this is a bad idea. So if you did 200 deadlift now, I would say a 225 deadlift by then is very doable. And that's also, it's a big moment, because you get two big plates on both sides. So I think a 225 pound deadlift by then, realistically, if I'm being very honest with you, Laura, I think you could probably do that by June, just to be blunt with you. But just, it's a really fun goal to have, to get two plates on there. So I think 225 deadlift by that time is definitely doable, and it'll be a really great moment. I would say, let's say you get 225 before then I would say make it 225 by 5. Right. So like for 225 for 5 total reps by your birthday. I think that would be, if you can do 225 for 5, you're starting to get very close to your 2x bodyweight deadlift goal.
Oh, okay.
So that would be like a cool, like 225 for 1, but then once you hit that, 225 for 5 is a really great goal to have. I would say for chin-ups, chin-ups are without question like one of the most difficult exercises in the world. And I always want to put realistic expectations on this. So it's just about a year. So you know what? I would say to be able to do one full unassisted chin-up by your birthday would be a tremendous accomplishment. If you could do a full chin-up by your birthday. Now, let's say you can't. Let's say you get there and you don't get the full chin-up. that's not bad. There are some people who are very quick with their chin-ups and other people who take a little bit longer. I've worked with some people, some women who it took them about two and a half years to get their first one. And I worked with others where it took them a couple of weeks. So it's the spread is very broad, but I would say that's a really good goal to shoot for. And it is pretty realistic because you have almost a full year. So I'd say a 225 deadlift and a one full unassisted chin-up would be a great goal for the coming year.
Okay. Sounds good.
Now, discussing all of these goals, does it make you feel a little bit more confident in terms of if and when the passion for hitting consistent your calories dies, when it dies down, do you feel like, you know what, like I still have these other goals that are very important and exciting to me. So you're not, are you not as worried about it as much?
Yeah, I think I'm definitely at that place and having some things to work towards. And I actually also wanted, if we still have time to
ask you about
whether I should continue. I've always been a numbers person and really analyzing, like I told you, I read everything and, you know, I want to do everything exactly right. And I always was very hung up on the BMI chart and the weight. It said I need to be at least below this number to be considered a healthy weight. And I know that that's not necessarily the case. So I guess I'm close to that now. I wonder at what point I consider myself, and I'm thinking health-wise, you know, cardiovascular health and just general overall health, you know, when I should switch, you know, do I need to get to the weight that I think I need to get to, or would I be okay where I am now? I mean, for example, when I first started losing weight, I thought I needed to lose 50 pounds because I wanted to be back where I was when I was in college and right after college, you know, I wanted to weigh 125 basically is what it was. I never got anywhere. I never got there. I got to 40 pounds down. And when I got there, I was happy. I was, well, I shouldn't say that I was happy. I should have been happy. I kept thinking when I was doing all that running and everything, I looked at myself and I, when I look back now, I looked good. You know, I was very healthy. I was well into any healthy range according to the charts and things, but I still thought I needed to lose more. And it was some influences of other people in my life who were extremely fit and have a different viewpoint of all of this and sort of feeling like, oh, I need to be like them and keep losing more. When I look back now that I've gained some, I would love to just be back there again, which I'm about 8 pounds away from there. But then at that point, I wasn't strength training. So, you know, would I have put weight on if I was strength training then that was muscle? So I guess just figuring out if I'm where I should be, you know, how hung up I should be on that crazy chart. And I also wanted to ask, I don't know if you've ever talked about this that I've heard, the waist to hip ratio. And they say there's a healthy, I think for women, you should be below 80 for your, that ratio and the measurements. What do you have think about that, or what do you know about that?
Yeah, so we'll start with the BMI. There's a lot to say about this, and I've seen a lot of fitness people online just hating on the BMI and say, oh, it's bullshit. It's like no one should use it. That's an oversimplification in the same way that it's an oversimplification to say that, oh, well, the chart says you should weigh this amount to be healthy, so you have to weigh this amount. Like both extremes are oversimplifications. There are massive flaws with the BMI, notably among healthier weight individuals who strength train and work out. There are massive, massive flaws. And I would say for you and for me and for most people who work out regularly, the BMI is not really a good chart to use. For people who are not very physically active and are on either end of the extreme weight range with either a very, very, very high body fat percentage or a very, very low body fat percentage, it actually is a pretty decently accurate way to say this person might be up for some really serious health issues. That's really what it should be used for, which is like for the extremes, for the population of people who realistically, if we're being very honest, for the relatively small population of people who do consistently work out and are very aware of their nutrition, it doesn't make much sense. But I see a lot of people demonizing it, saying it's completely ridiculous, it's not valid, da 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 da. But they're forgetting that the vast majority of people, unfortunately, are severely overweight and very unhealthy, and they're not paying attention to their health and fitness. And for as an easy way for doctors, as an easy chart for them to be like, okay, this person's here, like we need to actually get like make them aware of this. And I that's a whole separate discussion of how good they are at talking to patients and making them aware of what they need to do. It's they have a real issue with that in the doctor's world. They need a lot of improvement. But from that sense, it is relatively valid. But for you and me and for most people who pay attention to their health and strength training, it doesn't make any sense. Because I mean, Laura, you just deadlifted 200 pounds. If you don't think you've added some serious muscle and some serious bone density to your frame to do that, like you're out of your mind. Like, so it's one of the reasons why when I speak to women who've been strength training for several years, they've built more muscle, they've built more bone density. And they're like, well, you know, when I was 16, I weighed this. I'm like, yeah, but you're not fucking 16 anymore. Right, and right. You weren't lifting weights when you were that old, right? It's like, you've put on so much more strength. Bone density is one of the ones that are so massively overlooked. Like, in order to go from deadlifting with dumbbells to deadlifting with a barbell, 200 pounds, like, holy hell. You've added some real bone, like legitimately, like to me, this is crazy. And I think this is the nerd in me coming out. Your body has literally created more bone because of that. Oh, like really? How insane is that?
That is, I did not know that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of the, and it's actually, it's so important. It's one of the reasons why strength training is so important, especially for women. You know, one of the leading causes of death in women as they age is they fall and break a hip.
Yeah.
It's like, that's one of the leading causes of death as people get older, especially women, men as well, but not as much. Women, you'll often notice their bone density deteriorating at a relatively young age. And that's why it's so, so important, because a fall, as you get older can literally be deadly if you're not, if your bones aren't strong enough. So it's, to me, the fact that your body will create more bone from strength training is one of the most astonishing things I've ever heard of in the scientific community. And our bodies are miracles that they can do that. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like, you know, a lobster, you can cut off a lobster's claw and it will literally grow back. It's like another crazy thing. To me, it's like, it's on par with how crazy that is, that we literally grow bone. So, for the BMI for you, I would not use that as your end-all be-all at all. For you, I would be much more focused on how you feel in your clothes, mm-hmm. how you like what you see in the mirror, how your performance and energy is. Like, those are the things I would really, really focus on, and not so much the scale.
Okay.
If you were 200 pounds heavier and just starting your journey, we would be having a very different conversation, right, to be honest. But yeah, and then in terms of the waist to hip ratio, you know, I've found a very similar thing to the BMI. I think it can be very oversimplified. Personally, I've never paid any attention to that whatsoever. I don't think, like, there are, I think tracking data, I'm a numbers guy from the perspective of, I love tracking data. I love looking at progress over time. I think tracking data is very helpful and very important, but at a certain point, you might be tracking too much data, right? It's like, so you're tracking so much data that you're getting overwhelmed with the numbers, and like, you're not even sure which ones are the most important. I think, Laura, for you, the most important numbers right now are tracking your strength in the gym. Those are the numbers that matter the most.
Yeah, and I think that's what I've been looking for by tracking all these other numbers. It's like, I'm looking for an excuse to say that I really just want to work on my strength. You know, I was hoping these numbers would fall into line so that I could stop thinking about fat loss and start thinking about getting stronger, if that makes sense. Like, I'm trying it's that way where I'm always questioning everything. I'm like, well, I can't start focusing on strength and not be in a deficit until I'm at this point first with my weight, with fat loss, you know. And like, I want to be given permission to not have to worry. And then, of course, wondering, you know, if I am not in a deficit, will I get stronger faster?
Oh, you definitely will. You definitely will. And it's not to say you can't get stronger in a deficit. You absolutely can and should if everything is done properly. But there's no, when you get out of a deficit, you're going to feel better. You're going to have more energy. I've always found that I sleep way better when I'm not in a deficit, which is ironic and interesting because when you're in a deficit for a long period of time, you get more tired, right? Like it's normal. It's as your body downregulates its metabolism because you're eating fewer calories, you'll be more tired. You'll move less. But the quality of sleep I found is not nearly as good as when I'm well fed. So it might actually be interesting to track that as well, like as you increase calories or move just towards maintenance, just being like, oh shit, like I'm actually sleeping better. My strength in the gym is like, that would be wonderful.
Yeah. And I do sometimes wonder if I, worrying so much about getting these few pounds off and like, and just, I tend to obsess about things and I've just been so focused on that, and yet I'm not exactly doing it because I had all those months of inconsistency. So when I'm not being consistent, then I'm angry with myself for not being consistent. But then when I am consistent, I'm in the deficit. So that's a fact. I wonder if I should just take a break from it. But I've seen progress right now, though, too. It's hard to just stop. But
well, let me ask you this, and I'm going to ask you a question, and there's no right or wrong answer other than what you truly believe is right. So when I ask you this, I just want you to say the first thing that comes to your mind. There's no delay. There's no thought like, and again, there's no right or wrong answer. It's all about what you want to do. There is zero judgment, nothing. The only right answer is the one that you want. Without hesitation, what do you think is the best thing to do right now? Continue to stay in a deficit or increase your calories?
I still think continuing to stay in a deficit.
Perfect. I love it. That's it. Then there's the answer. And there should be zero shame in that whatsoever. There's nothing wrong with that. You hit on a really good point. You're like, listen, I'm making great progress. I don't really want to stop right now. That's perfect. That's an amazing answer. So that's what you're going to do. And the best part about what we've done already is now you have other goals to strive for so that when the time comes where you decide, you know what, I'm going to increase my calories, you already know what you're shooting for. And that will be helpful because you already have the reason to stay on track with your nutrition rather than oftentimes what happens with people where as soon as they decide to stop trying to lose weight, they just balloon back up because they don't have their next goal in place. But you've already got your goals for the year. You got 225 deadlifts. You got your first unassisted chin-up, which for whatever it's worth, like staying lean helps with chin-ups, right? Because if you gain a lot of weight, it makes it a lot harder to pull your body weight up.
Right.
So it actually makes a lot of sense. I've always found having a chin-up related goal without people even tracking their calories, oftentimes having a chin-up focused goal will help them get leaner because they want to make sure they're not pulling up a ton of excess weight.
Yeah, definitely.
So does all of that make sense, Laura? Do you have any other questions?
I don't think so. I think I hit on everything, really.
Are you sure? We have plenty of time if you want.
Yeah, no. No, I'm looking at my list here, my notes that I had. I think I'm good. I just, for me, it's just always, the churning in my mind of what should I do. But I'll just, stay in the deficit until I really feel like I'm happy with where my body is, and then move into the next phase. I'm just a constant questioner.
Well, so, this brings up a really good point. What I would say is this, I would give yourself, rather than waiting until you feel a certain way, I would give yourself a definitive time in which that is the limit.
Okay.
Right. The reason I say that is because you mentioned it earlier. You said something to the effect of when you had lost weight earlier, you're like, and I was happy. And then you changed it. You're like, well, I wasn't happy. I should have been happy. Right? Yeah. Because it's so much harder in the moment to be aware and to look at yourself objectively. But in hindsight, you can always say, wow, I can't believe I wasn't happy with how I looked then, because like you see it differently. So I think one of the best things you can do right now is say, all right, when I get to this range, whether it's like maybe if I lose between 5 to 8 pounds, that's when I'm going to say, cool, it's time for me to maybe not go into a surplus, but slightly increase my calories, go to maintenance for a little bit, just to see how I feel. Because that way you're not going by like, oh, well, I'm finally happy with how I look. Because sometimes in the moment, it can be really difficult to do that objectively. So you need a range where like, all right, if I lose between 5 to 8 pounds, anywhere in that range, I'm going to increase my calories. I'm going to take a little diet break and then reassess.
Okay. No, I like that. Thank you. That's good.
Good.
Okay.
Laura, this has been wonderful. I hope you don't regret doing this call with me. I hope you're
not at all. No. I've relaxed a few minutes in.
this has been amazing. I really, really appreciate you, Laura.
Thank you
for everything you do in the Inner Circle, your positivity. You're always present during the live calls. Like I really, really appreciate you. And I want to make sure you know that, because, just your presence and your support and your encouragement and your positivity is infectious. And I really appreciate you.
Thank you so much. And I really appreciate you and Susan and everything you guys do. It's really changed my life. It really has. I don't say that lightly.
Well, good. Please keep me updated with your progress. If you ever need anything, don't hesitate to reach out, and I will talk to you very soon. Okay.
All right. Thank you. Have a great day.
Bye, Laura.
All right. Bye-bye.
That wraps it up for this episode of the Jordan Syatt Mini Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And Laura, thank you so much for coming on. I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you did, please leave a 5-star review on iTunes. They really do help a lot. And if you'd like to join the Inner Circle, you can do that at the link in the show notes or www.sfinnercircle.com. Have a wonderful day, and I'll talk to you soon.